We're serene again today, Jim.
It's a laid-back start today, isn't it?
Just laid back. I'm tired.
Yeah, I know.
Need to sleep.
We're done with a long stretch of tournaments, and it's like, oh, it's appropriate.
It is.
Good music. In fact, I may nap during this show.
It'd be no different than any day of work for you. There it is. Nice. Hey, welcome to Inside Bassmaster. We are comfortably tucked into our plush studios, high atop the Bassmaster Towers overlooking beautiful downtown Birmingham, Alabama. This is your host, Thomas Allen. Joining me again today is the man at Master Control at Bassmaster.com, the Veep, Jim Sexton, which, by the way, celebrating 30 years with his bride today.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Gretchen, for putting up with me.
Thank you, Gretchen, for not killing him dead, because we kind of need him. So there he is, ladies and gentlemen. Jim Sexton back in studio with us. I've got on the line Ronnie Moore, Pete Robbins, and Coy Greathouse, our masterful fantasy pundits. We're going to talk about that. It's been an interesting couple weeks here. You're right. We're coming to the end of a very long stretch. If you've been on the road for each one of these, you're looking at, we're done with seven tournaments.
Yeah.
And the official middle of the season was after day two at Sam Rayburn Texas Fest. So, and I guess if you're counting days, we're in the second half of the season, but let's be real. The real second half of the season starts when we travel north to New York, hit our annual Northern Swing, completely changing venues. We're going from southern, muddy, super hot climate. It seems like it's been flood water, inundated waters here, and we're going to be going to some beautiful country. We've got the first stop is going to be the St. Lawrence River, which is always a very exciting tournament for us. Right after that, it's a back-to-back, so there's going to be a tournament. They're going to have 2 days of practice and then a tournament, and that is going to be on Lake Champlain, which is extremely picturesque.
You know, one amazing thing for that next that stretch in July, for so many elite anglers, they will go to ICAST, finish ICAST on Friday, and start practice on Sunday for St. Lawrence River, and then the very next week go to Plattsburgh, New York. So it's a 3 week grueling stretch for the elites. Now they got a nice break right now, mm-hmm. So I don't feel super sorry for them.
Well, but some of them are going up there now to practice before off limits.
That's right.
They're going to make two New York trips, which I don't feel sorry for any of them, no matter what. But they're going to have a long stretch ahead of them until the end of July. After July, this is one of my favorite places. I'm excited about it. We're going to go back to St. Clair, just out of Detroit, Michigan. The reason I love that place is not because of the bass fishing. It's because of the muskies that swim in that water, but that's not on this topic. After that, where do we... Oh, is that...
Mille Lacs.
That's a season-ending tournament.
That is, and then AOI at Mille Lacs.
AOI at Mille Lacs, and we're going to follow Mille Lacs up with our classic bracket challenge, which if you remember last year... we've had a classic berth on the line. The eight anglers in AOI, or the eight anglers that won Cayuga or something, went to Buffalo, New York to compete in that. And the way the classic bracket challenge is going to work this year is the eight guys outside of the classic cut post Angler of the Year tournament on Mille Lacs. So, and they're actually going to stay in Minnesota, my motherland, and they're going to be at Grand Rapids on Pokegama. Did you guys hear how I said that? Pokegama, not Pokegama.
Pokegama.
Oh, well, your eyes are glazed over when you say that.
But. Yeah, no, I can't slip away from my Pokemon youth, or excuse my young parenting with Pokemon.
I'll bet you probably played with those things anyways.
Yep.
Anyway, so we've got a very exciting wrap-up to the season, but before we get into any of that, in fact, we're not going to touch on a lot of that because we've got a lot of other stuff to discuss, and there's a lot of time between now and when we go to New York, so we're going to start out talking about Dardanelle. That was a week and a half ago, and it was it seemed like a longer tournament because it started on Friday and went through Monday. So we had our second championship Monday of the season, which if you're covering these events and you're spending time there, these anglers all mentioned that it's like that added day made it seem longer. But the good news is they really showed that place off.
Boy, they
caught
did.
A lot of fish.
What a great tournament.
It was. In fact, I don't have the results here, but we broke 60 pounds.
Yep.
I got to look those up. But anyways, Dardanelle. A lot of cool stuff to talk about. Jim, are you ready to talk about your selections at Dardanelle, or are you going to pull that cheapskate behind the pool?
I'm very prepared today. You know, I spent time before the conversation, before the podcast, and my picks, I had... I ended up with 905 points. I felt okay about that. Not a bad showing. I mean, really, when I compare myself to Ronnie, I feel great about this week. So I had Jason Williamson in Bucket A. That was my most disappointing pick. He finished 103, 69 points. That hurt. I thought that was a brilliant pick, and he had his worst finish of the year. In Bucket B, I had Mark Daniels Jr. He finished 28th. Solid pick. Feel great about Mark. Boy, he's having a strong year. That's his. That was his sixth out of seven cuts that he made. He's made six cuts out of seven tournaments.
Back
this year.
In the day, they used to comment on how a rookie angler would even make the cut.
That's right.
And now he's that
made
far
six
into it.
Out of seven. He's a strong angler. Of course, he fished FLW, so he's not a wet behind the ears angler. He's 15th in AOY right now and leading the Rookie of the Year race. So he's quite a story. We'll talk about him a little bit more. Had Fred Rubanis in Bucket C. He finished 51st. So I ended up having four guys who made the cut. But Bucket D, Greg Vinson, he finished 35th. Figured he was a river fisheries kind of guy and he'd do well. He did okay. And Rick Klun was my best pick. He was in Bucket E. He finished 18th. He would have finished a little higher. He would not have made Championship Sunday, but he had a he weighed in. He came to the bump table on Saturday, or I guess that would have been Sunday, with six fish. And I got a little penalty there.
Oops.
And so I would have had a higher finish with if Rick hadn't done that. And I feel bad for him, so I'm not going to make fun of him.
Well, I think he would probably beat all of us up.
If we right, exactly.
It's okay. You make allowed to make mistakes. Well, that was a, I won't say dismal. It's funny that we look at our scores this week and I'm happy. I actually moved up into rankings. I made some decent selections, but a couple of my guys bombed. First of all, Bucket A, Greg Hackney finished in 14th. Bucket B, Randall Tharp placed in 62nd. That hurt a little bit. Bucket C, Cliff Crochet, 106th. We didn't see that coming. This kind of seemed like his tournament, or it could have been. Mark Menendez was kind of my wild card.
Good pick.
I picked him because he'd done well there before. He had a good tournament at Ross Barnett, and I felt like his confidence is up, and he placed 4th. So that was a big score for me. And Justin Lucas has continued to improve, even though after day one he was in 13th place, dropped to 41st on the second day, finished the tournament in a strong 27th place, and actually, if you'll notice, he's at the very top of Bucket D, so he has moved almost through two complete buckets in his last two tournaments, and I expect that to continue to improve.
Good for him.
He's definitely got some good stuff going on, which is good, because he's definitely had a tough year. Now, let's go to our wise guys on the line. Ronnie Moore is the first one I want to talk to. And this is a little bit exciting only because I like to jab Ronnie a little bit. He had such a great monologue at the last show that we did about all his selections, all his science, all the stuff that he put into it. And Ronnie, I want you to start this out.
He actually sounded like he knew what he was talking
he did.
About. I mean, I bought in.
You picked guys that he suggested. Well, maybe not.
Maybe not. Maybe one.
Maybe one. But Ronnie, what was your score and who were your guys?
Well, my score is the worst I've ever done in fantasy fishing, a whopping 617 points. And for the first time ever, I had zero guys fishing on day three. So none of my picks got paid, and I didn't get paid as a result either. So I was such a terrible event. It kind of sums up my Arkansas fishing right now. I just moved to Arkansas to start a new job with Bassmaster in February, and I haven't really figured out how to catch these Arkansas fish to a great extent, which makes sense why I would suck at picking Arkansas or picking anglers to do well in Arkansas, since I haven't figured out how to do that either. So I picked Dustin Connell. I figured Dardanelle's water conditions was similar to Ross Barnett. He's a river angler at heart. He was the leader of the rookie year coming into the event, high on confidence. And it was just a story. I lost fish for him. I got to go to the weigh-ins every day, and he was just so down in the dumps for how many fish he had lost on day one on bait that you probably shouldn't lose them on. But that just kind of rolled into the event. He moved up some and gained 11 points on day two, but he finished 85th. And then I had two guys that I thought would be decently safe picks for how they were getting caught. Fletcher Shryock and Bill Lowen in Bucket B and C, and they were the two that were my highest finishers, but they barely missed the cut. 58th and 59th, Fletcher is probably looking back. Hindsight, always 100%. It's always 20/20, and he probably wishes he had a fifth keeper on day two since he barely missed the cut and he only had four fish. So that's brutal for those two to barely miss the cut, especially those guys are you know, Bill Owens won to make the cut, squeak in maybe, and then move up on that third day, those 3 points on Saturday or Sunday, you know, in this instance, day three, the weekend, moving up, and he was only able to move up 2 spots from day one to day two. So that was a bummer, and I thought it was a really good pick for him only being like 3% owned. I was like, I thought Bill Owens was going to be a steal. My biggest probably disappointment from day one to day two was Jared Littner, 30th, and he dropped all the way to 75th with only 2 fish on day two. That hurt me because I was hoping he would, you know, top my field. After day one, he was doing so well. I was like, wow, I might have 2 or 3 guys in the top 50 and salvage it, and it didn't end up that way. And then my last pick, I'm just happy for Skylar Hamilton that he's alive and well and going to the next event all in one piece because he had a scary accident on Earth. Almost accident on day two. He had caught a couple keepers, but he decided to release them after getting stuck in a major rainstorm and almost, you know, coming head on with a barge, which for everyone who knows the event, a lot of current running through Dardanelle. Those barges were running at a lot higher speeds than normal, so they made up a lot more ground on boats running in those rainstorms. So he got scared there, but he was 102nd, my worst pick, and he's kind of been on a downhill slide since his home lake at Cherokee, but I figured he would excel there before he went to smallmouth country. So now he's really got to catch him well, doing something out of his comfort zone, maybe fishing smallmouth the next three events.
You know, you're right. That whole story about the barge was pretty scary. And just to give everybody a brief synopsis of what happened, it was raining so hard that he couldn't see. It was just a torrential downpour. And Ronnie, you might have to refresh me here, but he had to stop for some reason as he was running pretty fast. And what did he stop for?
He was stopped to clean his glasses because, you know, water can catch in the rims of your glasses. So he was stopping to dry them off to clean them up so he could see better. And when he dried them, looked back up and put them on, there was a barge headlight like 10 yards in front of him, and he had to do a 90-degree and kind of get out of the way, which from a standstill in a boat, most people know, takes 2 seconds, 3 seconds to get on pad. So,
well, and it wouldn't have taken that long for that barge to put that boat underneath it, so it's definitely a close call. I didn't know he released his fish that day, but that's interesting.
Yeah. Ronnie, do you feel like if you had just taken darts and thrown it at the lineup, you would have done better?
Totally, totally, totally. I feel like this was one of those events. I talked about Sam Rayburn and how I almost had all the dots connect and I could have killed it and did great, even better than I did. Well, Dardanelle was the opposite, and none of my dots connected, and all my backup picks were way better than my original picks. So
it's possible you bragged too much about Rayburn, and the karma on you really was rough.
I don't know. Well, you know, Ronnie, your South Carolina boy, Shane Lineberger, had a great day one, and I was kind of thinking, you know, Ronnie should have gone with his South Carolina gun on that one.
Yeah, should have stuck with that route.
That's all right.
We made fun of him last time about picking homers, and he went away from it, probably based on peer pressure.
Maybe.
Yes. You guys, we've seen this Fantasy Fishing Pundit podcast group is it kind of bookends on peer pressure, so I'm gonna really try to put some earmuffs on when you guys start critiquing me because it kind of hurt my feelings.
Well, I'll tell you what. When it comes to critiquing, you'd have a nice high tee to knock the ball out of the park on this next one. But Pete Robbins, I don't know if anybody is more brokenhearted than Pete Robbins. You had a bad tournament, Ronnie, but Pete had the lead decision-making guy and his roster all the time. I don't know what any of that means, but I'm going to let you elaborate, Pete. Steve Kennedy.
I'm distraught for sure. As you know, all year long, Steve Kennedy has been, depending on what week it is, either my muse or my nemesis.
Mm.
And after he bombed at Ross Barnett, which I believe was his worst finish of his Elite Series career, I figured he was focused on other things now. That, you know, Kennedy's attention comes and goes, and that it was gone for the season. And he came back and he proved why he's such a great angler and why I've had so much trouble getting him off of my roster, because you know at some point he is going to win. And he won this one, and he put together an amazing tournament under very tough conditions, under changing conditions, and I give him all the credit in the world. I'm just disappointed I dropped him this time. And as we'll see in the St. Lawrence picks, next time I think he's going to go back to done well at the St. Lawrence. And it's just his year for whatever reason, whether it's because he's in a new boat or something else is right, you can't deny the power of that momentum.
That's an absolute. Overall, I was just going to say that the fact that that is something that we're going to talk about is the momentum factor this late in the season. And before you get on to your picks, I'm trying to recall, how has he done in smallmouth country? Is he pretty good with the brown ones?
You know, he's inconsistent, but he's done well at the St. Lawrence in the past. I think he had a seventh place finish in 2013, and he was barely in the money in 2015. And this is one where, you know, we've talked a little bit about him having a new boat, going from having one of the slowest boats on tour to one of the fastest boats on tour, and in all likelihood, a more reliable boat now. And the St. Lawrence obviously is big water. It has current. It can have big waves and rough stuff, and that has to just give him more confidence and more ability to branch out and take some chances.
Mm. So do you have him on your team for St. Lawrence?
Absolutely. I have him on my team. I'm not going to put back on that. You know, if he fails, this was the problem. I had a decent finish at Dardanelle. I had 1,024 points. I had four guys in the money, but I had no one in the top 12. And, you know, I was reminded of the old bowling adage that strikes are for show and spares are for dough. I had a lot of spares this time, but I couldn't get anyone into that top 12, which killed me because I had two of them there after the first day and Justin Lucas just outside it in 13th, and I ended up with no one fishing on Championship Monday.
Well, let's have that list.
After speaking about momentum, I did jump off of someone's momentum. I thought about taking Jason Christie. He had won at Dardanelle, but I switched to Greg Hackney in my picks, and that was rewarded. Christie finished 72nd. Hackney finished 14th. So even though it wasn't the top 12, that's a huge gain of points for me right there. In Bucket B, I had Gerald Swindle. Again, it was a huge gain of points because I came very close to picking Randall Tharp, who had won at Ross Barnett previously. And I figured would do well in that type of water. So Swindle at 31st is a big gain over Randall Tharp in 62nd. The one bucket where I failed was Bucket C. I had Matt Herron, who finished 69th. And that was right on the heels of coming close to picking Mike Iaconelli, who finished 10th. So that's a huge disappointment. I don't know what happened to Herron there. And he's obviously not in a great position heading into smallmouth country, and I'm disappointed for him. Bucket D was, I felt, my biggest risk pick. I took Tommy Biffle, who kind of like Kennedy and Ish Monroe and Kelly Jordan, is one of those guys who seems to finish in the top 12 as often as he finishes in the bottom 12. In this one, Biffle started off strong in 10th. He fell each day from 10th to 30th to 33rd, but that's still a good pick for your Bucket D. And in Bucket E was my one pick who had over 3.5% ownership, Justin Lucas, who was owned by nearly 20% of contestants. But he finished 27th, so I'm pleased with that. Anytime you can get out of Bucket E, which is remarkably strong this year in every tournament, but still, anytime you can get out of those guys who don't have the momentum going with the top 30 finish, you have to feel good about that.
So, in the midst of some of that disappointment, you have once again pulled ahead of Ronnie Moore, so there is a win here.
Yeah, I feel pretty good about that. Anytime I'm ahead of Ronnie, it is a good thing. I don't know if he was drunk on Carolina cheer wine or vinegary barbecue, but... But, you know, Ronnie's getting 600 points. Is that like, remember in the old days in the SAT, you got 400 just for signing your name? I kind of feel like 600 points. As long as all your guys catch a fish, you get to that point. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I hate to gloat too much because the season is not over. There's a lot of fishing left to go.
Well, Pete, you're sitting in first in our internal group. And,
I feel pretty good about it.
I don't want to put any pressure on you or anything, but... You are in first place.
It's kind of like being the world's tallest midget. It's not a huge accomplishment, but I'll take whatever I can get.
Yeah, I can take that as an offensive remark.
Thomas, you're in second.
Mm-hmm. What's the point spread there?
You are behind by, let's see, 30. You're behind by 60 points.
Ooh. I might have a new objective, Pete.
And it looks like Coy is in third.
Is he? No way.
What's your username, Coy?
What do you mean, no way?
No way.
I think it's just my name, Coy. No, what is it? I don't even know. I haven't looked at that in so long. I think it's just Coy Greathouse.
Okay.
I'm not sure that he's in this group.
Goldfish.
I don't think he's in the group.
Okay. Next year you can get in on this one.
Sorry.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
As Van Damme said, you're not part of the community.
Yep. He's got to do one more season, and then we'll maybe let him in, depending on how he finishes.
Oh, fair enough.
Well,
I don't want to beat those bad, then.
we're going to stack that expectation and where you're going to help us do better too, since you seem to have this nailed down. So Coy, take the floor. You did well, I think. I've been talking trash to all you guys, and just know that it's because I have nothing else to do with my time. So you're on, Coy.
Fair enough. Hey, before I start, what was your, because you and I did kind of go back and forth a little bit earlier, what was your point total for this tournament? Just before I start talking smack, I want to make sure I actually did beat you.
Well, okay. All right. If you're going to give me that chance, it's 968 points. Which is, he's already laughing because he knows the answer to that. But I did move up in the rankings by 3.5%. So it was tough for everybody, and you just seem to have done better.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, that's exactly what I wanted to ask, because I actually had 939 points. So you beat me.
I did.
So,
I did beat him.
The crap sandwich that you were talking about needing to eat, I'll take that.
There you go. I'll serve it up hot. Yeah. Would you like your sandwich toasted?
I think I deserve that one. yeah, a wheat bun, please. So, I actually started off great, and I was super excited because I knew that I was going to be able to kind of give you all a little grief this week because my team was pretty solid. I actually, on day one, I picked two guys that were in the top 12 and one that was in the top 30, and then the other two guys were further down the standings. But I had Kevin Van Dam, bucket A, first place after day one. That was super exciting because I kind of called it. And it's funny because last time we did a podcast, I had all these notes prepared and things that I was going to make this big grand joke about the jerk bait. That was going to be the thing that caught all the fish and even in the muddy water. And that's what happened. I mean, he caught a lot of his fish on a jerk bait at Dardanelle. Like, what are the odds of that? So anyway, that was kind of funny. And then second place, Bucket B, Ish Monroe, 24th day one. I was really excited about him because, I mean, he has a knack for catching good fish. But the problem with Ish is he's either has a giant five fish limit or one or two fish. So the first day he had 14.5 pounds, pretty good limit. Second day he had two fish for 4 pounds, dropped from 24th to 71st. So that hurt. That hurt bad. So. By the way, bucket A, let's see, every bucket I picked the right guy of the two people that I kind of was leaning towards, and I picked the right person in every bucket but bucket E. So I'll get to that in a second. Because Kevin Van Dam, let's see, he beat Kevin Van Dam beat Jason Christie and Greg Hackney. Ish Monroe beat John Cruz. He was my backup. Bucket C, Matt Heron beat Cliff Crochet. Neither one was a winner there. That was bad either way, but at least I wasn't 100 and whatever. I was just 69th by the end of it. Bucket B was Skeet Reese, and Skeet Reese beat Jeff Crete. Skeet Reese started off in 7th day one, dropped to 35th, and then went back up to 24th. So he had a decent event, strong finisher for me. And then Bucket E, Chad Morgan Taylor, got his pants whooped by Rick Klun. So really was feeling good about Chad Morgan Taylor. Rick Klun was my backup, and I should have gone with it. It would have definitely put me over your points for the tournament. So that's kind of a bummer. But that's where I'm sitting, 939 points, 86th percentile, looking to jump up into the top 10 here before the season ends. So
where's your what are your season standings? What percentage are you overall right now?
I'm 86th percentile, 6844 points. I'm ranked 4,692.
This is funny, Coy. I'm digging this right now. So you said you're 6,884.
I'm
6,888 in point, or that's my points.
Oh, yeah.
And my rank.
44 points ahead.
My rank is 4,000th. Whatever, I don't know why we're bragging about this. 4227, and my percentage is 87.4. So I am officially ahead of you right now, and that's what matters.
All right.
This next
tournament's gonna turn it all up a notch for me. I'm feeling good about it. So we'll see.
Well, let's shift gears a little bit here.
Hey, one thing on our rankings right now. I got to give props to two of our bass employees who are less experienced in bass fishing. They're kind of rookies in the industry. And at Texas Fest, Susan Sutton was the leader of our in-house group. She won it. Susan is in marketing. And then last week at Dardanelle, Sarah Fry won it. So, that, you know, it kind of hurts when the folks who know the least about fishing kind of do great. So
A blind squirrel finds a nut.
It goes to show. Yeah. It goes to show.
Sometimes there's no justice, but I suppose you just got to roll with it.
That's right.
Let's talk strategy going forward. And Ronnie, I know you're probably looking to get on the road here pretty quick. So why don't you start a little bit about what it is you're going to do to turn your train wreck of a tournament into a better finish on the season?
Well, I appreciate that. One thing, I feel like, yeah, I wish I was Jason Christie. Everybody does, but I really feel like Jason Christie because I was second or third all year, and I was slowly gaining steam. And then I took the lead, and then I gave it all back in one event like he did at Dardanelle. And that's really harsh of me to say, but he's doing way better off than I am. So in life right now. But I think going forward, we tend to get in a rut of wanting to pick the same people because, man, like, you could look at an Ott Defoe, a Kevin Van Dam. There's nothing they can't do. So I'm going to experiment in the second half of this season going out of my comfort zone maybe and picking some guys that maybe don't stereotypically do well. They might not have great history there, but that maybe, you know, are a wild card. That I look at them and I'm like, maybe. And then, like, I start talking myself out of it. When I look at someone these next couple events and I say, you know, I pause at them and I say, maybe I'm going to probably stick with them a little more than I should. But, and that'll burn me some. And I wouldn't expect to, I will expect to get 100th for some of these picks over the next couple events. But I do think there's a 51 guys that make day three and we're only picking five. So, we need to share the love around. I need to share love around a little bit more than I have. So I'm going to pick some guys, you know, in those bucket E's and those bucket D's instead of picking the guys that shouldn't be in those buckets, you know, based on the last couple of years. I'm going to pick some guys who are down there, but that, you know, this is kind of going to be their deal maybe the next couple of events. So that's my kind of – but I'm really going to try to hit bucket A and bucket B. I have to hit those out of the park. Those seem to always be my stumbling points. Dustin Connell was my weakest pick at Dardanelle, and he was one of my bucket A picks. So I really got to shore up the top of my lineup and then sprinkle in some magic down at the bottom.
Well, that sounds cheer whiny-ish. Sounds like a good way to go. Coy, why don't you talk to me a little bit about your strategy going forward? Surely you've got some in-depth encyclopedia newspaper ink-covered fingers thing going on right now. I'm sure you've got a big plan.
Yeah, one of these days, we should do like a video podcast where I got a camera on me because you should see the 12-foot table that I have in front of me is loaded up with all my research material. So just know that I'm doing more research than anybody else. Today, I wrote my article in 4.5 hours. So
wow,
very. It takes a lot of intentionality to sit in the McAllisters and let people look at you funny for 4.5 hours while you're stealing their Wi-Fi. So, so I have a really good strategy moving forward. It's kind of, I mean, I'm always the guy that's going to try to pick low-owned guys. I try to keep my overall pick percentage for each guy combined below 50%. So that's everybody's under 10%. And I really like to be more like the 30% range, but generally speaking, there's one guy in one bucket that I have to pick that's higher owned, and that's the case this go around. I'm a hair well. I made one change, so there's I think I'm under that 50 mark at this point. But keeping that ownership low, I found a kind of a good way to explain that where it makes a little bit more sense. You can kind of picture each bucket as its own tournament, and so just the law of averages. Kind of works out how it works when you combine all five buckets together. But if you can beat, you know, everybody else in that bucket, then you beat however many people picked. Like, for example, if we were to go in this next tournament, Scott DeFoe is 13% owned, roughly. Kevin Van Dam's 39% owned. If I was to pick Ott DeFoe, if this group of anglers in Bucket A were its own tournament, then everybody who picks Ott DeFoe beats everybody who picked Kevin Van Dam. You know, there's a 28% difference there. Just you beat that many more people. So if you kind of take each bucket as that may be clear as mud, but if you take each tournament as its, or each bucket as its own tournament, the more people that you can beat by picking a lower percentage angler, the more you move up the standings as a whole. So that's part of the reason why you went up this week with only having 900 and something points.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you beat a lot of people who might have had really good anglers in the other buckets, you know, one or two buckets, but they tanked in a couple of buckets. So their points were lower than they would have been. So anyway, we can get into more of that later. I'm a big proponent of picking low owned guys. It's starting to make sense to where I can actually explain it a little bit better, but maybe we talked about doing a podcast. Maybe we'll sit down and actually try to hash out exactly the best way to explain that later. But
yeah,
also picking guys who have a lot of momentum and picking guys who are pressured by AOI and classic verse. That's going to be a big part of my strategy in the last three events, regular season events. So anyway, I think it's going to pan out.
Well, you hope it's going to pan out. I hope it doesn't.
Well,
no.
I'm not in your fantasy party, so it doesn't really have any play anyway. So.
You know, I always got to rain on my trash talk parade. Pete, tell me about your plans going forward for the rest of the year and what you suggest on earning some points back.
My strategy is not to overthink it and look for micro trends where no trends exist. Mm. And looking back at the St. Lawrence in 2013, if you looked at the top 12 there, it was full of smallmouth guys like Kalanick, JVD, Ott DeFoe.
Mm-hmm.
And it was also full of drop shot guys like Clifford Perch, Aaron Martins, Josh Bertrand, Kevin Hawk, Chad Pipkins. So you would say going back in 2015, I should pick guys who are either smallmouth guys or drop shot guys. None of those guys made the top 12 again, with the exception of Bertrand.
Mm-hmm.
It's mostly largemouth guys looking at it. It's Edwin Evers, who I associate with Dirty, Oklahoma Water, Alton Jones, Greg Hackney, Skeet Reese, Mark Davis. What I'm going to do, unlike Ronnie, who said he's not going to look so much at history, I am going to look at history. I'm not going to let that be the only thing that determines my picks. Like Coy, I am going to look at guys who are pressured by the Angler of the Year race and by classic position, and I'm going to combine those two things and try to come out with picks that make sense to me at this point in time.
Man, that's some good stuff. I like the classic pressure. I like the Angler of the Year pressure. That's something I think that paid off for Seth Fighter last year. He really, really wanted to fish Mille Lacs. He knew that he was running out of time. In fact, right before we made our Northern Swing, I had a talk with him. He's like, I really got to make some changes. Things have to work. And at Cayuga, he really turned it around and did well. And I think that they kind of feel the pressure of that Angler of the Year fishing event, the Mille Lacs tournament, or it's going to be the classic situation where they know if they're on the bubble of not making it or making it, they may make better decisions, fish harder, whereas some guys that are above or below, they may be fishing to just earn points. Whereas, you know, really, I want to coast in the rest of my fantasy fishing season so that I might be coy. That's something I've set forth as a goal. So maybe picking the guys that are going to earn me points to keep me running is going to be just enough. And that might be the same mindset for guys in the 15th through 25th positions in Angler of the Year. So, and we're going to switch to that right now. So let's talk a little bit about Angler of the Year trends. Pete, you talked about micro trends. You don't have to give away your secret if you've really got a secret, but momentum is key this time of year. This is there are three regular season events remaining. So some of these guys only have three tournaments to endure. Are some of these guys going to fish harder for a win? They're going to lay it all on the table because they got nothing to lose, or how do you think that's going to play out?
I really don't know. You know, in baseball, the sabermetricians have talked a lot about whether there's such a thing as clutch. And some people say that, you know, David Ortiz or a Derek Jeter is a clutch hitter. And a lot of the statisticians say that it's really just a matter of reverting back to the mean. And we remember when guys have big moments and we let that color our judgment. But clearly there are guys out there, the Mike Iaconellis of the world. Remember when Mike Iaconelli had to win an Open at the end of the year to make it into the Classic?
Mm-hmm.
There are guys who always seem to find a way to get in there. And I think you have to look both at guys who respond to pressure well, and you also have to have a situation where the tournament's set up well for them. Someone like a Tommy Biffle, he could certainly do well up north. He won a few years ago at Mississippi River, but I don't think northern fishing is generally his strength. So even if he's fishing well and fishing under pressure, I don't know that he's someone I would pick. But someone like a Seth Fider or a Josh Bertrand or a Mike Iaconelli who does well up north and has something to prove or something to gain, I would look for them to make the most of it. And normally I would say that favors veterans as well, guys who've been through the ringer before, but we have such an amazing class of rookies this year, guys who don't seem to be rattled by anything, that I'm not sure you could make that generalization.
You know, you made an interesting point there. Guys that are just not rattled by much, and that might be the theme. If you look at the top 10, top 12 of the AOI, I know Jim wants to talk about this, but there are some guys that have proven their salt and don't get rattled by much.
Boy, that top 10, top 12 of AOI right now is so interesting and full of just hammers. I've got it in front of me. And Ott DeVoe's in first, Jacob Wheeler's in second, Brandon Palahniuk's in third, Casey Ashley is in fourth, Mark Davis is in fifth, then Jason Christie, Keith Pochet. No, I got that wrong, got my pages out of order.
Van Dam is in
seventh. Van Dam is seventh, Bobby Lane is eighth, Edwin Evers is ninth. 10th is Jordan Lee, then Hackney and Faircloth. Randy Howell's 13th. But boy, I feel like there's there's kind of a murderer's row there where, you know, they know how to win. That group knows how to win and can pour it on when they sort of smell blood in the water. So I feel like we got a group there that really is going to be fishing with some intensity and some confidence. And I'd like to pick as many of those guys as possible. Unfortunately, they're pretty much all in Bucket
all
A.
All in Bucket A.
But I like that group. At the back end of AOY is a really interesting story. There's two classic winners that are sitting above 100 right now. Chris Lane. Where's Chris Lane right now?
108.
Chris is 108. And I feel like he's going to turn it around at some point. I feel like he's going to be swinging for the fences. He won at St. Clair a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm. Drove up to Huron.
Drove up to Huron. Is that your first tournament?
I think it was. Yeah. No.
No, that was the time before.
Yeah,
Faircloth. That's right. Faircloth won there. So Lane is interesting. I still feel like there's going to be a tournament where he surprises us. And has a great finish. The other one, the classic winner, Takahiro Amori, is 103rd. So, you know, after winning a tournament last year and having some momentum, Takahiro is way, way down there. Chris Zaldane is 101, pretty strong smallmouth angler. Shaw Grigsby is at 100.
He doesn't belong there.
You know, it's there's some surprises at the bottom also. I think Faircloth is a real interesting one. Go ahead.
Tim Steiner up for a minute.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about pressure to move up in the standings near the top of the chart, but there's also the matter of requalifying. I know it's not just a matter of finishing in the top 70, that there's some complicated math, but there are guys who are quality veterans who've had great careers who are in serious danger of not requalifying at this point in the year.
That's right.
And I assume that is a amount of pressure, too.
Yep. One of the guys at the top that I'm kind of fascinated with right now, Todd Faircloth is 12. And Thomas, you mentioned that the Faircloth won the last time we were at St. Clair. He also won at the Mississippi River.
He did win a Mississippi River.
Mississippi River 2012, 2013, right in there.
Yeah, I think it was the time before Palahniuk's DQ with Tommy
Biffle
winning.
That's right, exactly, out of Waddington. And so we're going back to some areas where he's had success, and he's sitting at 12 in AOY kind of quietly, and of course that's the way Todd operates. He is quiet, and so he's quietly in 12th place going into the part of the country where he's had some success.
Coy, talk to me a little bit about how AOY is going to impact your selections. I know that, you know, we've talked about momentum, but man, if you could have the top 12 guys, one of them in each bucket, I mean, they would be the top-owned guys in each of their respective buckets. But how do you go through this? Do you break this down in segments and decide, well, this guy's on the cut bubble, this guy's running for AOY, this guy's hoping to not get cut out of the Elite Series this year? What do you make a decision on?
Well, there's definitely, you know, as you work down the bucket, the intention changes, you know, like I actually earlier today, just to try to get my mind around what happens if a guy gets too low in the standings. Like I'm thinking of guys like Chris Lane and Mauricio that have been in the game for a long time. Do they just get cut if they're below that mark? And what he said, just so everybody kind of knows who's listening to this, apparently they take your average angler of the year finishes, they take your lowest one out, your highest one out, and they come up with an average number. And if that is so far up the standings, I guess everybody past 70, they kind of order them to a certain point, and then anybody below where they stop is they're not going to requalify. So that's scary. I mean,
you're almost right. There's one piece to take out there. They don't take out your highest year. Take out your lowest for the average.
Okay, perfect. So good to know. Thank you for that. But that's scary for some of these guys who've been doing this for a long time, and it's how they've made their career. And I'm thinking of guys like Charlie Hartley that got knocked out a couple of years ago. You know, I know that I think he's trying to requalify, or at least he fished a lot of the opens and did relatively well, actually. So on the top end, though, I'm thinking about – I'll give away one of my picks or one of my secondary picks here, Brandon Palahniuk. Now, he does not want to know where he stands. He doesn't – historically, he's not cared where he stands. He does not want that pressure on him. He's like, I just – you know, if I'm near the classic line, that's great. I'll just keep doing my thing, and if I make it, I make it. But he's in third place right now, and I cannot imagine a scenario where he is not very intentional about what he does, because he's 14 points out of the lead. Like, how can you not think about that? So, you know, I'm looking at some of these guys really, the angler of the year is the guy who stays the course, the guy who continually does really well in these tournaments. And so he's thinking he may not be going for wins, but he's fishing for that AOI. He needs to have good, solid top finishes. He's going to take a few less risks than he might otherwise to try to stay up there. I don't know. That's kind of the way I see it. And the guy is kind of on that classic bubble. I guess 35th is kind of where it starts, and 37th, somewhere in there. And there's a lot of guys in bucket C and the end of bucket B that they do not want to be outside that classic bubble. I mean, you look at Jacob Prosnick, Elton Jones, Dean Rojas,
Aaron Martins,
Aaron Martins, Bill Lowen, Steve Kennedy, 51st. He was so disappointed with not making the classic or not winning the classic this last time that it's probably one of the biggest things on his mind. So, Skeet Reese, I mean, there's a ton of names down there that they need to be in that classic range. And so they've got three events to do it, and they better step up their game, and they know it.
I'll tell you a few guys that are so interesting as we head north. Hartman, who's New York native and has done so well this year. Hartman, where is he standing?
23 in AOI.
23 in AOI. Had super strong finishes. He tanked, I think, at Okeechobee. But he's done so well. Hard to keep him off your fantasy team. Seth Fighter, hard to keep Seth off the fantasy team going north.
Well, I won't be.
Yeah, no.
I'll give that away now.
I'd pick him at every one of these.
So let's get a little bit of insight from Ronnie. Ronnie, by the way, he mentioned he just moved to Arkansas. He is complying with his duties as a husband. It's a long story that maybe we talk about some other time, but he's actually going to dinner with his in-laws, so we can't keep him from that. But I know he wants to add a little bit to this before he's gone for the evening. So, Ronnie, talk to me a little bit about how AOI is going to impact the decisions that you make.
Well, I think one guy that you want to root for, he's my age, but he just flat-out catches them. He makes nothing into something almost every event. And when he's on something, you can see his full potential of being at the top. And that's Jordan Lee, one of the guys that, you know, you think of him as an Alabama, Tennessee river angler, but he has yet to disappoint this year. His whole career basically missing four Elite Series checks in 2.5 seasons. And he's in his mid-20s. He's definitely set the bar
for the next round of young anglers coming up. And I think that he's one of those guys like Brandon Pollock, like, you know, Coy was saying, guys that don't get too caught up in it. We saw it at the Classic. He thought he was way too far behind to even have a chance to win. So he just goes out there and fishes relaxed. And when he fishes relaxed, he knocks it out of the park 9 times out of 10. He fished relaxed at Sam Rayburn because he was in 9th going into the final day, way behind as well. And at one point during the day on Bass Track, which was completely official basically at Sam Rayburn in that event, he was within 2 pounds of Polinick and Ayler. And he had started back 13, 15 pounds behind. So I think, you know, looking at the angler of the year standings, obviously Bucket A are all the guys who do great. But I think you look at those guys who make nothing into something, whether they're on 70th place caliber fish and they turned it into a 45th place finish, or you're on a guy who's on first place fish and he doesn't disappoint and he doesn't drop off. Jordan Lee's one of those guys. He's definitely going to, he's definitely to tease my St. Lawrence picks. He's one dude I'm looking at, and I'm licking my chops in that bucket because he is under-owned. I feel like if he's got anything less than 15% ownership, it's a steal every time because he doesn't fit and he catches them everywhere. So I think looking at those guys who normally can turn nothing into something, a Gerald Swindle, someone who gets stronger every day, maybe doesn't start out, you know, in the top 7 to 10, but he's in 35th or 40th, and he moves up to the 20th place, and then he moves up to 12th, and then going to the final day, he'll move up and finish in 7th or something like that. Those guys who gradually gain steam every single event, I think those are guys that you really need to look at, because this season starts to get tough. These guys got a lot of pressure on them, sponsorship obligations, Classic cuts, contending for AOY, paying bills. These guys have a lot going on. And, you know, some guys say when we took away that winning in years ago where anglers used to be able to win an event and get to the Classic, people said, well, what are the guys in 80th to 90th place fighting for? Well, just like you guys have mentioned, requalification, keeping their average anglers finish intact and not adding that blemish. So I think that there is something to fight for, even if you can't directly get in the Classic. I think it still says a lot about who you are. If you're a Chris Landon, you can turn it around, those kinds of things. So I think some of those guys have been there and done that. They've struggled through the tough years, and they can turn nothing into something, are going to be the guys that are going to be the guys that you want to look at. And I think Jordan Lee's going to be one of those headliners of turning nothing into something every event.
Hey, his brother's not doing too bad either right now. He's finished, I believe it's 2 top 12s out of the last 3.
Those are his 2 top 12s in his career. Yeah. Those have been awesome.
And, you know, relatively recently.
And that's one big thing that people always compare the two brothers. I got to fish against both of them in college. They are both already ultra-motivated, competitive guys. They didn't need their brother's success to determine how hard they try. But if there's anything that maybe sparks putting in an extra hour or two on the water, devoting more attention to your free tying, whatever the case may be, I don't know if Matt Lee has done any of that or if it's just his time and he's growing into himself as a really serious angler, but, you know, a top 12 at Dardanell and the top 12 at Toledo Bend definitely show two very opposite fisheries. A fishery you can catch a 10-pounder on, a fishery where a 3-pounder is gold. We've seen he's one of those young anglers that gets overlooked because of his biological brother that he, you know, grew up with. He gets overlooked a lot more than other guys and compared probably unfairly. But yes, you guys are right. He's one of those guys that is learning how to lay up maybe and not have a 80th to 100th place finish where he can lay it up into a 50th or he can turn a 50th into a 30th, you know, and that's something that he's learned in these last 4 events since the Classic.
Well, Ronnie, you've got obligations. Thanks for being with us tonight. We're gonna probably wrap this up in a few minutes. We'll get back into our selections in detail and get Ronnie's take on St. Lawrence River at the next show. So get in and order me some breadsticks or something. I'll be right over.
Thanks, guys. I'll try to survive.
All right. So we're having a great conversation based on what is going on with the Angler of the Year race. And one of the points you made was Matt Lee. And I think that's a risky selection for some guys because he does have a tendency to bomb once in a while. But I think Jordan's Classic win motivated him. And I've literally have not had a chance to work with him or be around him personally until after the Classic, and I'm very impressed with his candor, with his confidence, and he's like, hey, my little brother is going to be a legend. He's not afraid to say that. In fact, he left a very impressive statement on the stage when he was at Dardanelle about his younger brother. So
that was so interesting, and it's gratifying to see Matt do well, and I think whether he thinks he can compete with his brother or not, I think he wants to have a career in fishing. Mm-hmm. And so he's fighting, and it's impressive to see how he's grown this year. This is his third year, and Matt came very, very close to not requalifying.
Did he make it in because someone?
I believe so. I think he was the last existing elite to make it in.
Who is the gentleman from Maryland, from Ocean City? Guys, can you help remind me? Who was that? Won the nation.
Fabian Rodriguez
decided to not come back in.
And that made spot for Matt.
That made a spot for Matt, so he was very close to getting cut.
He's made the most of his chance.
So one more question for each of you guys. This bottom-end cut thing is something that we need to pay more attention to. We need to talk more about. Is that going to motivate an angler to fish better at the end of the season when they're down and out? Or are the guys at the top fighting for that AOI spot going to fish harder and work to make better decisions? This is a real catch-22 question, but what do you think? Who's got more on the line here?
I think it's a lot of it's personality based. If they're close to not qualifying, you know, if a guy can stay relaxed and at the same time be really intense about his preparation and his fishing, he could do great. Now, on the other hand, if a guy is so tight because you know, of worries of not qualifying and financial issues and things like that, he could spin out and do the thing where you're trying so hard that you're hurting yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when great anglers are doing well and kind of in a zone, they can relax in a way that that helps them catch fish. So it's a tough question to answer solidly, but those are a couple thoughts.
Coy, what do you think?
And it's going to be disappointing for anybody who does not requalify. And as soon as somebody jumps up into kind of in the realm where they can requalify, it bumps somebody else out. So there's no way to win in an overall, this kind of big picture thing. Somebody's got to fall outside the qualification, but there's so many of these guys, and Ronnie and I were talking about it earlier, it really affects the young guys because they don't have many years worth of good AOIs to negate the bad years of AOI. They kind of have maybe one or two average or average finishes in AOI. So when they have a tank like this, it really, you know, it really can hurt them. I think those young guys are really going to be motivated more than anybody because they don't have a longstanding career like Takahiro or Chris Lane or Marizo that kind of pull them back out of that zone. So it'll be really interesting looking at some of these, you know, Latsuo, John Hunter. I mean, not necessarily young guys, but guys who have small careers with the Bassmaster Elite Series. Gerald Sporer.
Sporer, yeah. He's a rookie, so he's got 2 years.
Yeah, so even guys like Skylar Hamilton. You know, I guess they have 2 years. So some of these guys that, I mean, I guess I'm not looking at the rookie of the year standings to know exactly who's in and who's not, but I think Chad Grigsby is a 2 year guy now. Is mm-hmm. that right?
That's yes. correct.
I don't think he did very good last year either. So he's got some work to do in order to get up high enough where he's safe. So it'll motivate a lot of these guys. I can only imagine building a career in bass fishing, getting to this point and then falling out. That'd be devastating. So I want to see them all succeed. End of the day, somebody's got to step out so that new guy, Jordan Lees and Matt Lees, can come into the picture and show us how to do it.
Well, the key is it is the top end level of the sport, and you do have to have the winners and the losers. And I think that they all understand and recognize that. It's not something you like to see because there's such a personal aspect of fishing. But, you know, it's a part of the game. This is the top tier, and these are the best anglers in the world. And you have to make room for the next class of anglers. And the rookie class this year has been pretty impressive. My question for you, Pete, there are some rookies we are willing to bet on in fantasy fishing. And while he's not really a rookie, but Jacob Wheeler's first season in, it's not a tough bet to make. Jamie Hartman seems to be doing really well. Do you foresee any of these rookies who have done so well play into your picks going north?
I don't have any of them picked for St. Lawrence, but I certainly would. I mean, Jamie Hartman in particular is obviously a great pick going up north. Mark Daniels has gotten checks just about everywhere. Elton Jones Jr. has certainly been to all of these fisheries with the possible exception of Mille Lacs before. This is just an incredible class, and I can't fault anyone for picking any of them, but as you know, we only get one pick in each bucket, so I don't have any of them.
Well, there's a definite risk that goes along with that, and look, it's just a part of the game. If you want to earn some points, I think the ownership values would represent how well they're represented there. But the Mark Daniels Jr. story, it's something we wanted to touch on before we end the show here. We've got just a couple minutes left, but it's something that Jim has prepared immensely for. He's got scribbles on paper. He's got pens everywhere. I can see marks on his face where he was putting the pen in his mouth. And so what's going on with Mark Daniels Jr.?
Well, he's a fascinating story. He's a Northern California angler, grew up on the West Coast, and went to college at Tuskegee University in Alabama. And stayed. I'm not quite sure more of the story of why he
not
stayed.
Not sure why? Go back to Northern California.
But he did. That's where he's based now. Mm-hmm. And so he came from the FLW. Mark is a mid-30s age guy. So he looks younger, but he's a pretty experienced angler, and he didn't come to the sport necessarily super early. Mm-hmm. So as we said earlier, he's made 6 out of 7 cuts, and I've got him written down. He finished 40th at Cherokee. Okeechobee was the only one where he fell out of the cut, but he finished 65th. So, you know, not a terrible place. Toledo Bend, he was 28. Ross Barnett, he was 29. Rayburn, he was 25. And Dardanelle, he was 28. So he's not had spectacular finishes anywhere. But it's fascinating to see that those finishes have put him at the top of the Rookie of the Year standings right now. Dustin Connell, who won a tournament, is sitting in second now. Jamie Hartman, who's, gosh, how many top 12s has he made this year?
I think Mercer mentioned out of 6 tournaments or 7 tournaments, he's finished in the top 12 in half of them, and that's the top five.
Yeah.
Not like he didn't get a 7th or 9th. He's
finished 2nd at Cherokee.
3rd at Toledo Bend, I think.
I don't have his bombs in front of me, but they must have been pretty far down.
Well, and that's something that Dave Mercer had mentioned. Dave Mercer's our MC. You see him, you hear him mostly lead the tournament weigh-ins, but he made this mention to me that If Hartman would have had one of those tournaments be in the top 50, he would probably be dominating Rookie of the Year. So he's definitely, these guys have showed that they belong here. Jesse Wiggins, he's in 4th place, has done well. Alton Jones has made a cut. And the list is interesting from there, and there are some experienced anglers that you know are probably dealing with that first year jitters, or they're just trying to find their place. But that top 5, top 6 and Rookie of the Year.
You feel like those guys are going to stay around for a while.
They seem to have the staying power.
They really do. It'll be interesting to see how Dustin Connell handles the northern fisheries.
Mm-hmm.
He's got so much experience in the southeast, mm-hmm. and I just wonder how well he's going to do up there. You mentioned Wheeler, and he's not on our rookie list because he's made too much money. Elsewhere, we've got a dollar figure. I don't remember.
I think it's a million.
300,000.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, it's 300 or 500 or something like that. So if they've made that much in professional fishing, they don't qualify to be a rookie. But you look at him, we haven't talked about picking him at this point, but he's 2nd in AOY right now.
He's a smallmouth specialist. He won on Cherokee.
That's right. He's from Indianapolis, from Indiana. He's halfway up north, and so he could really be a factor in the last third of the year.
Well, we've got a very interesting wrap-up to the season. We're excited about it. We have not gone into picks for St. Lawrence. I would briefly, if you guys got them in front of you, I would like to hear, without any explanation, just bucket A, so-and-so, right down to bucket E. Who do you got? Pete, if you have them handy, what's your selections at this point?
I do. Bucket A, Edwin Evers. Bucket B, Clifford Perch. Bucket C, my muse/nemesis, Steve Kennedy. Bucket D, Bernie Schultz. And Bucket E, Morizo Shimizu.
Pretty good. Coy, what do you think?
really similar. Bucket A, Edwin Evers. Bucket B, Seth Spider. Bucket C, Elton Jones Sr. Bucket D, Bernie Schultz. And bucket E, Chad Pipkins.
So there was this time, Pete, I got to tell you, it was at Bass Fest last year. I was still managing this fantasy story stuff. We were doing all our things, and Edwin Evers came off the stage, and I had to interview him for something. He goes, "I got a question for you. Why don't you ever pick me in fantasy?" And he kind of gave me that snarky smirk, and I was like, "Well, I don't know. I guess I don't have a good reason." And I have never in my life picked Edwin Evers. And it's not because I don't think he's capable. It seems like the times I had thought about it, he had really high ownership, or I felt like I had a better choice. And it usually bit me, kind of as Steve Kennedy did you. But for this event, bucket A is Edwin Evers. And bucket B, my homeboy from Minnesota, Seth Fighter. Bucket C, Jacob Prosnick. Bucket D, sticking with my good luck charm, who has earned me some points in the last two tournaments, Justin Lucas. And I think Shaw Grigsby is going to start digging himself out of the hole, so he's my choice in bucket E. Jim?
Well, I'm considering a new strategy for me, and what it is that it's going to be basically the 5-minute strategy, and I will pick the highest person in AOY in each bucket. Just boom, 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 boom.
And that's like the top of each bucket, I think, because they're mostly AOY ranked.
Yeah, it is. So I went through and looked at that, and that looked pretty good for the first three buckets, and then the last two, it was like, oh, wow, this is not a good choice.
What he's trying to say, guys, is he hasn't made his choices.
I actually did make some choices. They're a little loose right now, so I'll adjust as we get closer. But a guy that I struggled with in bucket A, KBD, we haven't talked about Kevin yet. He's 7th, 6th in AOI right now and having a hell of a year and going up to his sweet spot, up in the northern part of the country. So I'm going to say KVD right now. I'm really close with picking Todd Faircloth, and I, of course, like Brandon Palahniuk going back to St. Lawrence. B, boy, that's a tough one. You got Hartman and Fighter in B right now.
Fighter finished in 12th place the last time we went to St. Lawrence.
Right.
Keep that in mind.
His only top 12 in his rookie year, by the way. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to go Hartman with B. Bucket C, I like Mark Menendez. D, Justin Lucas, and E, I probably pick up on Chad Pipkins there. Pipkins is not
Michigan
having a
guy.
Not having a good year, but gosh, I do remember when we were at St. Lawrence in 2013, Chad being in the top 12, so he's got some positive experience.
Well,
there.
He needs momentum. He's struggled again this year.
He was a guy, too, that was very close to not requalifying.
Well, he wasn't going to. He requalified because of an open.
That's right.
The way he finished the Northern Opens.
Yep, that's right.
So, pretty interesting. Well, hey, guys, this has been a lot of fun as usual. We are going to do another fantasy podcast before we get into the whole Northern Swing, which is something that we are all greatly looking forward to. But it's the end of the season is in sight, and I think the anglers are looking forward to it being done. They want us finish strong. So the guys that are kind of in the middle of the pack, they don't want to just let the season slide away. They want to make a good, strong finish. Maybe they're safe in AOY and they can fish conservatively. There's a lot of good stuff that we can talk about later in the month, later in June. We're going to talk a little bit more about this. We're going to get in depth. We're going to get Ronnie's insight, Coy's insight, Pete's insight, and Jim will steal all of our insight to make his list. So
absolutely,
we'll let him make that up. And we'll talk more about New York coming up. So that's going to be right around the corner. Thank you for listening. Again, this is Inside Bassmaster. This has been your host, Thomas Allen, Jim Sexton, the man at MasterControlBassmaster.com. Thank you to Coy Greathouse, Ronnie Moore, and Pete Robbins for participating. This has been fun. We'll catch you here next time. And also, if you like radio, Tom Abrams' radio show is also on Bassmaster.com in podcast downloadable form. Make sure you check that out. Thanks for being here.